What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Top Flight Pod. You know what it is? You know what we're here to do? Back for another episode with my G's. We got Scott in here today, ready to talk about Austin FC and some MLS news. My G Scott, writer for We're Austin TV, also in the press box, giving us some dope match analysis whenever he is up there. My G Scott. And also, we got JC in here. Now, I know you've heard JC from the spaces. A lot of people always thumbs up whenever he drops his take after an Austin FC match. Also a writer for us at WeAustinTV.com. Shout out to my GJC. Shout out to my G Scott. I'll start off with you, Scotty. How are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing good. I just got back from being out of the country for a little bit and glad to be settled back in Austin.
Oh, let's go. Glad to have you back in ATX for sure. Where were you at?
I was down in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic for a couple days.
Okay.
Vacation. It was great.
No, hey, enough said. Enough said, dude. I'm not going to ask anything else other than that. Now, I'll shift over to my GJC, brother. Welcome to the pod. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. Glad to be a part of this. Glad to see We Are Austin TV continue to grow. So just looking forward to another episode, man.
Hey, JC, one of the OGs, if you know, you know, always on those spaces, always helping us out at We're Austin TV, WATV, and now giving us some help on Top Flight Pod. Shout out to my JC. I'm very excited for this episode because I usually have Bali. I usually have Brian. Sometimes I have Football Critic. Neff has also been on here. But today I got two incredible people that follow Austin FC just as much as I do. So we'll get into the episode without further ado. Now, it'll be a quick rundown of the St. Louis match. I know by now a lot of you have already maybe had enough of that L. So we're just going to recap it just a little bit because there are some stuff that we do need to touch up on as we do on the Top Flight Pod. And then we'll get into the Houston Dynamo preview. And of course, before we get out of here, a lot of new rules coming into the MLS that you need to know about. So let's get into it. Now, only one goal separated the two Western Conference sides, with the home team, St. Louis, keeping all 3 points thanks to a Joao Klaus goal in the 56th minute. Austin FC tried to respond, but they couldn't get anything going in the offense, only generating 2 shots, which, yep, 0 were on target, but had 60% possession. Austin FC's last win away from home was against Minnesota United. That was on July 31st of 2023. It has been rough for Austin FC away from home. So, Scotty, your thoughts on the match against St. Louis, or your overall thoughts on the match?
I mean, it's something we've seen too much this season, which is that Austin FC on the road, just they don't seem interested in trying to get 3 points. It seems, even in Wolf's comments, I know we're going to get into that, it seems like his goal is just to try to eke out a 0-0 draw, or just to try to like keep the game low scoring. And it hasn't, besides against Seattle, who thus far is off to a really slow start, it really hasn't been successful at all. You just kind of wonder with like another road game coming up, how that's going to affect how the team plays.
But it's in Houston. So I want to ask you this before I go to my GJC. Is it really much of a road game, the one that's coming up? It's against Houston. I mean, you just got to travel a couple hours down 290. You think it's still going to be tough?
I think it's still like a mentality thing of like being home or away. Okay. You know, no matter how many fans Austin brings, like it's still going to be like, I mean, it's still an away game, and it's still not just the way that Austin approaches it, but how Houston's going to approach it, in the sense of they're probably going to come out with a little more of an attack and like a press mindset than they did last week when they were on the road.
Okay, we'll see what happens, right? Now, my GJC, your overall thoughts on the St. Louis match. There were some details we're going to get into, ready to analyze, but your overall take, you know, what was your thoughts on the St. Louis game?
Thoughts on St. Louis game was same old, same old. Going into the match, yes, St. Louis have had a dip in form, but their dip in form was a dip from the best team in the West last season. So their dip wasn't that big of a dip. I mean, they were still pretty solid. Now, their game plan, it took them a while to break us down, but they still had opportunities. They still generated chances, especially towards the end when they really could have just put the nail in the coffin on us instead of being 1-0. Could have been 2-3-0. By the end, because we were just leaking opportunities at that point. The goal that got scored on us, Klaus just had an excellent touch, but both of our center backs were back there. One or the other needs to communicate and pick it up. That's really what it came down to. People will talk about team play, talking about the build up, whatever. all one of our defenders has to do is just get a little bit closer mark on him. We might prevent that goal from at least from being easy or making it into a savable shot attempt for Stu.
Now, JC, Klaus lately, you know, I know that St. Louis is one of the newer teams, right? They're the most recent expansion team to come into the league. But this guy, Klaus, I mean, it seems like every time he plays against Austin FC, you almost fancy him to get a goal. You know, I'm not going to say he's the kryptonite for Austin FC's defense, but I can't tell you how many times I've seen this guy celebrate a goal versus Austin FC. I mean, this year he got one already. Last year he also had a moment. What was your thoughts on Klaus?
Dude's a beast. I mean, as far as MLS standards are concerned, he's still coming back from injury, in a matter of speaking. What I would call, he's not 100%. And yet, you know, he's one of the top players. He's expected to do well for them. And he always seems to come through, like I said, against us. We just tend to bring the best out of other teams in this league. Whenever they need something to get going, we're the ones that help them get it going. So it was normal, almost to be expected, unfortunately. He's one of those ones that we haven't got a read on, haven't got that tactic to where we could shut them down yet. You know, Pepe, before he left, he was one. Ferreira's kind of being another one for Dallas, so to speak. What's his face? In San Jose. There's several players who just seem to know how to work against us. He's so far proven to be one of them consistently.
For San Jose, I might argue Ibobasi has Austin FC's number. Espinosa plays well versus us as well, but good point. Good take also on Klaus. And, you know, right now that we're on the point, or kind of we're talking about this guy, this striker for St. Louis, I think this is a perfect time to kind of go over the goal. And I want to get Scott and get his take in on the goal, because something I was asking off air and a conversation that we were having in the days leading up to this pod was, who was this goal on? Because there's a lot of conversation on social media, as there's always going to be. And it seems like a lot of the time, maybe unfairly, maybe it is fair, Owen Wolf gets a lot of criticism, a lot of maybe negative energy sent his way for whatever reason. In this instance, though, Scott, it seems like maybe he has a little bit of blame. The buildup for the St. Louis goal starts in the midfield where Owen Wolf is supposed to be occupying. Seems like he maybe took the bait. Maybe he was out of position. That allows the space to open up for St. Louis. They march down the field, open it up to that right side, put that dangerous ball back into the box. And then we got to talk about Cascante, because it seems like he's just not tight enough with Klaus. And I mentioned a couple minutes ago how this guy is known to get a goal versus Austin FC. So when you see him on the pitch, if you know you're going to guard him, you got to get on him. You got to be tugging his shirt. You got to have a hand on his shoulder. Let him know that you're there. Unfortunately, both of our center backs are just enough yards away from this guy for him to get the slightest touch. It wasn't even a banger of a shot. It wasn't even, you know, harsh contact with the ball, Scott. So I want to ask you, not necessarily your thoughts on the goal, but who was this on? Do you think it was a team, you know, just malfunction, or was there somebody that you can pin this goal on, Scott?
So I think it's actually both. Like, there's team malfunction in the sense of, like, what happened further up the field that allowed St. Louis to get the space and get the ball forward, and that's Owen and that's Biro a little bit. There's a shot of Heinz Eich was kind of trying to get Biro to, like, go out a little bit more on the wing to try to put a little more pressure. That's true. That's something that Austin generally is kind of bad about. If you watch a lot of Austin goals, is Austin is not good at putting pressure on crosses or passes into the box, which is how stuff like this happens. You know, it's also on Julio, because as much as him and Heinz Eich are essentially trying to establish a defensive line to make sure that the near end header doesn't come in, he loses sight of the actual man while he's doing that. And, you know, Klaus causes those problems because, one, he's a big guy who's physical. Two, he's skilled. And three, he's smart. Mm-hmm. He knows how to use his size and his movement to be able to create those spaces and score. And our team doesn't do a good job of maintaining marking and maintaining a closeness that allows for the defending to really to negate those things.
I think that's actually a pretty spot on take, mate. You know, you mentioned Julio Cascante. A lot of folks were throwing his name around, and he just doesn't get close enough to him. Now, you do mention the instance where Heinz is waving at Beater saying, hey, you got to close that out. You got to go more to your left back position, because where Beto's positioned at when he's tracking back to try to defend this goal with the rest of the team, it's almost like we're having a three center back setup. Now, JC, I want to ask you this, mate. There has been, you know, there has been conversations that has been had with different fans saying, hey, Beto has that left back, he has that left back spot locked up. And one thing that I push back on that exact topic is the fact that maybe Beto's defensive rate isn't as high as I would want it to be for somebody to say, hey, it's locked up, it's his, he is our number one left back. And then I've also had folks say, hey, well, Jean Colmenage, he's not the best defensive left back that we have also. So I want to ask you, JC, I mean, was this just maybe a disconcentration moment from Beto, or are you concerned with his defensive work rate? Is that even fair to say?
Fair or not, the reality with our team is that I don't think any of our outside backs are really built for great defensive performances. Gallagher, we still talk about how he's converted from being a midfielder. He's playing right back. Biro, at least with him, he's supposed to be left back, but like I said, his defense, he's been utilized better, more offensively than defensively. Same with John, really. I don't know if we can gauge who is better by defense, because there, I don't think the coach asks them to really play defense that specifically. I mean, yes, the defenders, so there's going to be some defending involved, obviously, when you're getting back, but they're pushed up so high so often. Usually we're almost always cut out on one or the other side as a result of that. So it's really to pick your poison of what you need at time. Now, Johnston's coming off of his injury, but he at least was on the bench. So that was a good sign to see there. And so now we'll have some competition at that spot. And it's just going to be about who, it looks like it's going to be about who produces better offensively going forward and serving the ball in. We have the history with Jean Komenich, but Biro has shown to provide somewhat of a spark, at least coming off the bench. Will, as a starter, give or take, you know, have him out there. So I think the jury's still out on those two specifically.
Now, one thing that I do want to give credit to Biro on, JC, is the fact that he is a offensive left back. I think he does great when he's in the final third. He already has two goals. One of them was against Minnesota when we were showing absolutely nothing in the attack. He gets a ball from Owen. He's right in front of goal, and he puts it into the back of the net. Maybe it was a tap-in, but he hit the crap out of that. And then you have the goal against San Jose. That's an absolute screamer, and it shows that he's fearless. He shows that he's not afraid to duel Drewsy for a ball, and he says, yeah, Drewsy, you're not going to get this one. I'm going to hit it. And he puts it into the back of the net. But my only concerns, and this is what I was telling Brian weeks ago, and they were kind of coming after me. I was saying, hey, Biro defensively, I still see flaws. I still need to see more for him for me to say, yo, that's our number one guy. Now, he is convincing me. Football Critic and I were saying how Biro is very well trained in the media. I think he said a lot of the right stuff when he was talking about the match leading up to St. Louis. I think he just said some really intelligent things. So he's very well trained there. But to me, it feels like there needs to be more emphasis on defense from Biro. Josh Wolf said that in preseason, they were putting a lot of emphasis on defense. Biro for sure missed some of that. He arrived to preseason maybe a little bit later, not full preseason as you would want it to be. But to me, I would like to see Biro work a little bit more on his defensive side. Scott, do you have any thoughts on that instance? Because, you know, we pointed out how Brendan Heinzeck is waving at Biro to kind of put more pressure on that ball coming in. And I hate to say it, but I feel like if he kind of pressures that a bit more, that ball maybe doesn't even make it to Klaus.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the very least, like, just like applying some pressure there can at least make the ball not as perfect as it was, because it really was like a perfect cross in. I mean, some of it is also that like Heinz Eich's responsibility is to organize the defense. True. And part of that is like, you know, getting players used to each other and communicating. And I don't think they played a lot of minutes together. And so that's just kind of like the natural progression of having it. But at the same time, like, we've talked all season about Beaver's work weight not quite being there, and some of that was blamed on his fitness level or other things like that. And so we'd expect to see that increase now, because, you know, we're, you know, 9 games into the season or 8 games into the season or whatever, and like, you'd expect somebody to be more at full fitness by now.
Well, even though, you know, maybe some listeners out there will say, hey, they're putting all the blame on Beedle. I don't think that's the case. Like Scott said earlier, it was maybe a bit of a defensive malfunction, even from the midfield. You know, Owen kind of slacking there where he needed to be at to close out that space in the beginning. But Beedle, with a 7.0 match rating, he was Austin FC's highest rated player, according to SofaScore. So there you have that. So congrats to Beedle, 7.0 match rating. In the loss, he was Austin FC's highest rated player, according to SofaScore, like we said. But I want to move on to some of the stuff that the players had to say, y'all, because Alex Ring kind of surprised some folks. He came out, and he's been very honest. He had an interview with Eric Goodman. That article was fantastic, where we got a very honest version of Alex Ring talking about the captaincy, talking about other issues building up or that was surrounding the team in 2023. And in this presser, in this post-match conference, Alex Ring, he kind of surprised me in some of the stuff that he had to say. And I'm kind of happy that he did. He had this to say, and I'll get y'all's thoughts on this. He says, quote, "Maybe the final decisions, setting up attacks, keeping the ball, letting guys join the attack. I think today we lacked a little bit of punch. To be honest, in the final third, it was definitely a little bit frustrating in that sense because the last couple of games, we've been really good at that and not have that same punch here today is something we as players are going to have to look at for sure. I think it's about players doing their job. We talked about it. I think it's just recognizing the situations faster, especially when the goalkeeper, Burki, was pinging the balls to our left side for us to start shifting there. Those are important plays, and if you do your job, you keep it in check." Now, JC, I want to get your thoughts on what Alex Ring had to say post-match. He's taking the blame. He's saying the players are taking the blame 100%, that they talked about it. Surprised me a little bit. You know, maybe they were going to say that the tactical plan was not there. But what'd you think on what Alex Ring had to say post-match? For sure, showing a bit of his captain side. What'd you think of what he said post-match, mate?
What stood out to me the most is when he compared the efforts of the previous two games to this one. And all I can think about with regards to the previous two games was that we were up against weak opposition. Yes, you have to play who's in front of you, but Dallas was severely hampered with their injuries, and San Jose has been very poor this season. And both of them actually scored first and were up on us at our home. We were fortunate to come out with results against both of them, to be honest. So to hear that they had punch in those games and not in this one against what would be better opposition is a little discouraging. Like, of all what you would expect to hear is that you would have players come out with punch against the harder opposition, the ones you want to, you know, show that you're not as strong as you think you are. You're not as good. Mm-hmm. We're better than what you think we are. So to revert back to horrible play against a better opposition, whether they're taking responsibility or not, the fact that it happens should be unacceptable and is concerning going forward. There's just no other way around it, because what kind of mentality are you approaching the game with when that happens? How is that even allowed to happen? It makes no sense to me.
I agree. The punch was needed in St. Louis, and the punch was not brought. We did not bring any knuckle sandwiches. There was no picnic. Instead, looks like St. Louis stole our lunch money, JC. But there's another, there's a part two to what Alex Ring had to say that I put on my notes for the pod. And Scott, I want to get your take on this. Alex Ring, he also went on to say this. He said, quote, "Best case scenario would have been we come away with a 0-0 draw. And we thank our lucky stars because we weren't up to standard today. Pressure is a privilege for soccer players, especially there are many people who have real pressure in life, fighting for the next meal, not knowing how to pay rent and stuff. So I think as a sportsman, pressure is a privilege and you should accept it and attack it. If you don't, then you don't deserve to play." Alex Ring not pulling any punches there. Scott, what is your thoughts on this part two of the presser?
So the part two, the first thing that I hate that the best case scenario is getting a draw. That just immediately irks me and stands out. I mean, the point of playing the games is to win the games. Like, that should be the goal at all times, to win. The second part, I think, goes into a lot of seemingly a worldview of what's going on in terms of how you have to put pressure on yourself, even when you're comfortable, to try and do your best. And it really speaks to his level of of understanding and his level of leadership that like he acknowledges the pressure and wants the pressure and also wants to put that on the other players and hold them accountable for their actions. Like that's where leadership comes from, is making sure that everybody is doing their jobs correctly and paying attention and, you know, putting pressure on yourself to compete and do well at all times is actually a skill at this level. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, availability being important and blah, 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 and like work rate, but like being a work rate and playing as hard as you can is actually a skill that I wish more players, not just in Austin FC, but in general, had.
I see. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I honestly, right there, what you had to say, I think that's probably how a lot of Austin FC fans are feeling, especially after hearing what Alex Ring had to say. And, you know, I said earlier that he surprised me a little bit in just in the sense like, you know, I thought he was going to come out and say some stuff to kind of cover up what had happened. Instead, he kind of just laid it all out and he said, hey,
yeah,
players aren't doing their job. Players need to kind of step up. And also we go back to that nil-nil, hoping for that. And thank your lucky stars. I mean, oof. I mean, that just tells you where the mindset is of the players kind of coming into a stadium like City Park, having to play a team like St. Louis. And it ties into what we said earlier. You know, the punch should have been against St. Louis. It kind of feels like we beat up against Dallas and San Jose, two struggling teams, just like both of you said. And the fact that there was such a high from the city, from the community off of those two, and then just to be brought back down to earth, it just felt like it kind of just shocked a little bit of the fan base. But it
is what I mean, the fan base wants to root for a winner. We want to be happy and excited. And like, you know, we're so easy to like get behind the team whenever we start even see like two wins in a row. Yeah. And everybody's just like so hyped. We just want to see everybody play hard and play well. Like, I think we deserve it.
I agree. Now, there was some stuff that was said from Coach Josh Wolf. Of course, he always speaks to the media first. We got 15 minutes from Wolf and 15 minutes from Alex Ring. But here are some stuff that I put on the notes for tonight's episode that Josh Wolf had to say. Now, he goes on to say, quote, you want to generate more shots. I think we had plenty of opportunities where we arrived in good spots. We scored 6 goals at home. We could have had 8 or 9. It shouldn't change based on the venue, but it's always difficult operating in the opposition space. Again, I thought from a standpoint of what you want this game to look like, going to the road, to one of the more hostile, difficult places, angling for the best record in the league last year at home, it's going to be challenging. Our ability to compete in duels, possess the ball, create corners. We knew we weren't going to necessarily set up shop like we do at home, but there were some clear picture and opportunities, especially at the end of the first half, the last 10 minutes of the first half, and the first 5 to 10 minutes of the second half. It was quite good. We're arriving in the box. We make poor decisions and poor execution. All those things change games. There's no two ways about it. The margins are too thin. Josh Wolf kind of clearing it up a little bit, still blaming, I wouldn't say blaming, still kind of saying, hey, it's execution and decision-making that are harming us and continue to harm us on the road, he says. Last win was in July of 2023 on the road. JC, what'd you think of what Coach Wolf had to say here? I know a lot of people are saying that he's starting to sound like a broken record, but I think we need to really look at what Coach Wolf is saying here. He continues to go to the decision-making and poor execution by the players.
Well, yeah, maybe I'm going to be a broken record here. That comes down to coaching, education, leadership. And you're talking about execution. You have to put the players in a position to succeed. It seems like we keep hearing the same things over and over. So what's happening in the buildup and in the practice to change that? if you keep hearing the same thing week after week, yeah, the players have to be put in the position. The players have to execute. You have to do better here. You have to do this better there. And every single time it seems like that's the thing he's going to. So why hasn't it changed? Is it all on the players where they're just not hearing, they're not understanding? Is there not an incentive to do better? I would not believe after the things I've seen most of our players do, the achievements we've achieved, even back 2022 and beyond, they had the capacity to play, perform, and do well. So if you're focusing and telling them to do certain things to change certain aspects of their play, and you don't see that changing. You know, I'm in my mind, I'm questioning, okay, what is being done different in the buildup, in practice, because something is clearly not translating. And something needs to change in the instruction, in the communication somewhere, because the same thing keeps happening and there are no consequences other than poor results in the field. So something's going on before the game happens for it to continue to be the same.
The consequences and accountability is what a lot of Austin FC fans go back to whenever they bring up Josh Wolf and the FO and the poor results. But I do want to get Scott's take on this. There's one more quote that I wanted to read. Josh Wolf says, quote, "There's still a lot of good in this game. 1-0, it's disappointing to go home with nothing. I think we played well enough to grab a point, if not more." Now, Scott, here in front of me, I have the stats from the game. I'm just going to read Austin FC's. Goals, 0. Expected goals, which is the famous XG, 0.11. 2 shots, which none of those were on target. 2 yellow cards, 2 offsides, 6 corners, 62% possession, that's dominating, and 3 keeper saves, of course. The stats in the offensive side, they don't favor Austin FC. In fact, they kind of paint a bad picture of how Austin FC was in the final third. So what is Josh Wolf talking about? What is Coach Wolf saying when he is telling people that it's disappointing to go home with nothing, but he says that they played well enough to grab a point, if not more? What did you think on that, Scott?
So I see it from the standpoint that, like, they did hold St. Louis at home to 1 goal. And I do think that, like, defensively, like, if we're just looking at a complete results-based outcome, like, 1 goal in soccer is nothing in terms of talking about slim margins. You know, there was a chance in the first half when Rubio kind of missed a pass to Aubry, and that would have led to a really good chance. You know, a couple opportunities fell to Driussi that just weren't on target. But at the same time, like, when your team keeps having the same results, you have to look at the processes of it. And when you look at Austin FC's road form in terms of not getting shots on target and not really shooting at all or venturing forward, you know, you can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the results to magically change, or think that based on these, you know, stats of what's going on, like, you're not going to win games consistently when you only produce, you know, 0.1 XG. You just sure. aren't. That is not how anything works. And so to act like, oh yeah, we could have gotten a point, like, well, yeah, but I think a lot of people would watch that game and say you were lucky to only lose by one. So, you know, both of those things can be true depending on the eye of the beholder. And us as fans see that. And we can look at Josh's quotes and just kind of be like, well, he's wrong.
I agree. And, you know, maybe some teams out there in the world can win with that little bit of XG. I'm talking about the Real Madrids. We saw what they did against Manchester City. But, hey, those are just almost never scenarios, and you got to be extremely lucky. And I like what you said there, Scott. You said, hey, maybe he's talking about only holding St. Louis to that 1 goal. And I think earlier JC mentioned how it could have been 2, maybe it could have been 3, right? We did see St. Louis have a goal called back, rightfully so. It was offside there at the very end to make it 2-0, kind of put the final nail in the coffin. But, you know, probably that's what Josh Wolf is talking about, giving his boy some praise for holding one of the best teams last season to 1 goal at home. City Park is a very hostile environment. He said that in the press conference. So I guess probably that's what Scott's talking about there. Now, JC, before I do go on to some Houston conversation, that's such a good quote, and I do want to get your thoughts on that. What was Josh Wolf talking about? I mean, did this team do enough to deserve a point or maybe even more, like he's saying? Because people were saying this was a snooze fest. You got to at least have a shot to score a goal, and Austin FC didn't do that.
We are, if you take a look at our stats, you can even go to the official MLSsoccer.com website. If you look at the attacking stats, we are at or near the bottom of every significant offensive stat when it comes to shooting, when it comes to shots on target, accuracy, expected goals, all of that kind of stuff. We are at or near the bottom. So when he is saying, when Coach Wolf is saying that we are generating attacking chances, I'm trying to think, what do they define it different than the way the rest of us look at? Is it more involved? But clearly, you know, they have different angles, they have different approaches, different things they're looking at when they conflate all of this information together to present to the players and instruct them. But from a practical standpoint, the stats, but yeah, I'm going to apologize if this offends anyone. I'm going to use another sport, another coach. One of my favorite coaches in general, Bill Parcells, used to coach the Giants and the Cowboys in the NFL. One of the things he used to say is, you are what you are. Like, whatever you are doing, record-wise or whatever, stat-wise, you are what you are. There's no what is or what could have been or whatever. Whatever you're doing, that's what you are. And whatever the other teams are doing, that's what they are. They're beating you, even if it's at the death or slim margin, or if they're just outperforming or out defending or whatever, that's what they are compared to that what you are. So you're going to have to change who you are if you expect to have a different result by the end of the game. We have not changed who we have been for the past at least two seasons, year and a half, two seasons. So something has to change. We are near the bottom in attacking stats. Where are our goals going to come from? We were talking about our defenders earlier, right? Our outside backs are the ones getting up the field. They're in the box helping to score goals. Biro is scoring goals. He has multiple goals for us. Our outside back, that should not ordinarily be the case from our defenders. I want our defenders to excel, like you said, at defending. He hasn't shown that as much. Glad he's scoring. Same thing with Cascante. Glad he can head the ball in on set pieces. I would rather our defenders excel at defending and our midfield and strikers be the ones scoring the goals for us. It's backwards. Okay. I would like that to change.
Proper take. And I think a lot of people are going to echo that. You know, it's great that our defenders are scoring goals, but then when they're the only ones scoring goals, I mean, Diego Rubio is also up there, right? Khalid and Drewsy are now up there. But at the beginning of the season, y'all were there. I was there too. When it was only defenders scoring goals, and we were like, okay, this is not sustainable. So, JC, proper take there. Now, before we shift focus to Houston, I do want to read some comments from the Instagram full-time post just to see what the fans are saying on social media. Last takes on the St. Louis match. We have Yuri Pasta. He says, back to reality, it seems. This team is so frustrating. How long will Wolf last? We had Jay Barnhill 8. He says, bench Cascante for the rest of the season. A little harsh there. Austin to handle says, the only time they scored was a rookie mistake from Biru to not follow the wing wide. It's upsetting that the attack was lacking, but it could have been worse. I think that's something that we were saying a couple minutes ago, guys. And then let's see, just a couple more. Alex Burkhardt says, disjointed and uninspired. I don't know how many more of these performances are required to sack Wolf. Oof, pretty much a lot of Wolf out conversation in the comments. You can go ahead and check it out, the Russian TV on Instagram. And leave a comment yourself to see what you thought of the match. Now, shifting focus to the Houston Dynamo, that is the team that we are going to face on Saturday, this weekend coming up, 4/20, April 20th, whatever you want to call it. It's a 290 showdown, just right down the road, just head on down to Houston, pick up a cheap ticket. I think they got like 50-cent hot dogs. It's insane how cheap it is in Houston Stadium. And check this out, guys. I was talking to some Houston Dynamo, people yesterday on the Golds TV episode shooting, and they were pretty much giving all the details on what Houston is going to roll out for this match. Now, it's important to note, guys, that Ache will be coming back for this game. Maybe he's going to come off the bench. Who knows if he's going to start? But apparently, y'all, Ache's birthday is on the 19th, so this is also his birthday game. I haven't fact checked it, but a Houston Dynamo fan told me that. And tickets are going for $16, is what he was telling us. And guess what Achach's number is? You guessed it. It's number 16. So the Dynamo is rolling out with this huge marketing package for Achach, pretty much to get the fans in the stadium because they know Austin is coming into town. And when Austin comes into town, that means one thing, and it's a sea of verde. We travel so well to Houston, and I think this is going to be another instance of that. And I said this on the recording yesterday on Golds TV. I said, Austin knows what it's like to win in Houston, and I think they're going to get a result, either a draw or a win. Now, I want to start off with my G Scott. I rambled there just a little bit. I gave off my little take. But what is your preview? What's your prediction for the Houston match coming up? You're always in charge of the what you need to know. So tell the people on the podcast listening what they need to know about Houston. What is your thoughts?
Okay, so first I fact-checked, and his birthday is April 19th, so that's correct. Houston's a team that once they hired Ben Olsen before last season, completely kind of changed their outlook and how they play. The first thing you'll notice with them is that because of injuries right now with Sebas Ferreira out, they don't play with 1-2 striker. They really kind of play with a more kind of fluid system, especially up front. But the important thing to watch with them is how well they play together and how they move as a team. They always put their work rate is really high, especially in their midfield between Artur and Karaskia, and right now they have Latif Blessing with Herrera's been out. But those three guys cover so much ground and they get around every ball carrier. Their goal is really to try to get you to pass the ball into the middle where they can take it from you and then get the ball forward quickly. They're a team that counterattacks really well. That's one of the things that really helped them in their win at Minnesota last week. So this is not a match where Austin can just kind of like hold the ball and try to expect to just kind of like play through them. Houston's really difficult to play through.
Okay. Oh, I like that. Scott with the absolutely masterclass of a rundown. That's why you do the what you need to know, mate. That's why you do the what you need to know. But you mentioned Latif Blessing. You mentioned Carrasquilla. One of the things that the Houston Dynamo pretty much found that I was talking to yesterday on the Goats TV stream was the fact that Carrasquilla has been filling in for Acheache, and which that has kind of like regressed him into a more defensive kind of a holding midfield role where he's used to being more of an attacker. We know what he's done with his country, Panama. They went very far in the most recent Gold Cup. They lost to Mexico in the final, but Coco was absolutely instrumental in that run for his country in that cup. Now, Acheache has been out. We know that he's a huge talisman for the Houston Dynamo team, what he means to the team on the field with the confidence that he gives them, but also the kind of community that he brings into the stadium because he's a huge icon in the El Tri community. A lot of the He's just an automatic face to know if you follow the Mexican national team, sorry. So you want to go see him when he's available to watch with the Houston Dynamo. With Acheache coming back, we don't know exactly how many minutes he's going to get, like I said earlier. But JC Carrasquilla, let's see if he gets freed up. I mean, what's your take going into this match? Who are you keeping your eye on the Houston Dynamo to make an impact? I mean, is it Carrasquilla? Are you looking at Bassi? Are you looking at Blessing? Because the Dynamo was this in the season, but with Acheache coming in, I feel like they changed just a bit. But what do you think, bro?
So the fact that comes in, that's what's going to make the difference to me. Now I say that, but as we already mentioned, we was playing a week in Dallas. They scored on us first. We was playing a week in San Jose. They went up 2-0 on us. So I'm not taking anything for granted, despite the fact that they're one of, if not their best players, is out. Quick breakdown, very simple quick breakdown. Our very brief history with Houston, okay? Because you mentioned that before you started about us being a team that goes to Houston, travels with, yes. But 2021, we played them twice. We won 3-2 at home, but then we lost 3-0 at their place.
Oof.
2022, our best year, we won 2-1 at their home and won 3-1 at our home. So 2022 was awesome for us, obviously.
We
But
got the
in
double.
23, yeah, in 23, though, we lost. We had three times where we played them. We lost 2-0 the first game. We lost 2-1 the second game. But then we came home and won 3-0. So our history of playing them away, we've only gotten one result against them away from home. Only those 3 points, though, the only 3 points that we've ever achieved in Houston out of the game. So we've played them one, two, three, four times at their home. We've only won once, and that's the only time we've taken points. So it's going to be a
Oof.
tough environment, even if we travel well. It's going to be a tough environment, especially if Hector plays, because he inspires that team like Drew Yusey inspires our team. And then you got his birthday on top of that. You know, people always like to show up for the birthday. So better believe, and right now they are tied with Vancouver for second in lead. They're third basically because of either goal scored or goal difference. I don't remember which one's the tiebreaker, but they had the same amount of points as Vancouver, who was second in the league. So there's some pride at stake outside of just the rivalry in and of itself. Now, yes, it's still early in the season, but they're going to come out trying to establish themselves early on us. I think they're going to get off the front foot and try to attack and put us away early. The longer we last, the better shot we have coming out of that stadium with the draw. I don't know who's going to score goals for us. I don't know if it's going to take injury or penalty or some lucky call from the refs. Maybe
some
with
set pieces.
Maybe something with the new rules will help establish some kind of point for us there. We'll see what happens. I'm not optimistic for a win. I think at the very best, even though I want us to go for the win, I think the very best, based off our current form, is going to be a draw. Maybe 0-0, maybe 1-1 tops. I don't think this is going to be a very high scoring game.
Oh, my GJC came out with the numbers and the stats. He said, I'm not going to speculate. This is what happened in 21, 22, and 23. Now, my G, it's one thing that was pointed out in the Goals TV stream yesterday was the fact that somebody either wins. Well, sorry, there's always a winner and a loser. There hasn't been any draws in the history between Austin and Houston Dynamo. There's zero draws between these two teams. That Austin has won. Sorry, it looks like Austin has won 6 versus the Dynamo's 4, according to this website, soccerpuncher.com. So that's going to be very interesting. Hopefully those numbers continue to be in favor for Austin. But hey, the last 5 matches, the form that they're coming into this game, and I want to get Scotty in on this because JC touched up on the table and how, you know, Houston Dynamo is in the top 3. He also said that it's early in the season. So I want to ask Scott this, how much stock can we put into the table right now because it's early in the season? But the recent form, Austin is coming into this game, losing to St. Louis, back-to-back wins against San Jose and Dallas, of course. They also have a loss and a draw. Houston is coming into this game with a win, a loss, and then 3 back-to-back wins. So they have the much better form in the last 5 games. So, Scott, like I said, I mean, how much stock can you put into the position that both of these teams are in right now, early in the season, and also their form coming in? I mean, just who do you think it kind of favors more?
So I wanted to reference something JC said. So MLS is the one league where wins is the first tiebreaker after points. and then it gets into goal differential and goals for. I think we're to the point of the season where we have to look at the standings as a good barometer of team quality. I mean, most teams are already a fifth in the way to the season, and we have enough evidence at this point to see kind of who's good and kind of who knows what they're doing. You know, I do see the game being fairly low scoring. You know, we talk about how ineffective Austin's offense has been, but Houston Dynamo are actually last in XG right now. So it's not a team that creates a lot of chances. I mean, they only had 0.5 against Minnesota on Saturday. They've been kind of scraping by. Like, they're a team that the margins have benefited a lot of ways, and it's either one of those cases of it's a team who knows how to get those advantages and win, or the idea that, like, they just had a few lucky bounces. But this seems to me like a team that just kind of knows what they're doing. And teams in MLS who know what they're doing and have a committed style are more likely to get those advantages than those who don't.
All right. Well, hey, check this out. Give me a score prediction, Scott, and then I'll get JC's. What is your score prediction going into the Houston Dynamo match this Saturday, Austin versus the Dynamo?
I have Houston 1-0.
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me, bro. That means that they get a good Copa Tejas result, I guess, and they also get the 3 points. But 1-0, Scott, final answer?
Yeah, 1-0. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I don't believe in Austin's ability to win it to get a result on the road.
All right, JC. Let's roll the dice, mate. I love it whenever you give me your text, brother. What's your score prediction for this one?
As I mentioned, I am not certain where the goals come from for us. Juicy is probably our best opportunity, but they're going to try to lock him down. I think I'm with Scott. I was leaning towards 2-1. I'm leaning towards 2-1. I think Houston will perform at home. We're just one of those teams where when you play us, when you need a result, you need to get going for whatever reason we provided for them. So it seems like that's the way it's leaning.
Okay, my JC says 2-1. Scott says 1-0. Both results in favor for the Houston Dynamo. Now, yesterday on the Goals TV stream, I said Austin FC could get a 2-1 or a draw. I said, hey, Austin could be leading the entire game, and then in the final minutes, they could give it up like they did against Philly, like they did against St. Louis early on in the season. So that was my take. I'm gonna stick by it because there's a reel out, and they posted it on Goals TV and We're Austin TV, so now the folks know what I said. So I can't go back on it, right? So I have Austin getting a result, either a draw or a win in Houston. But let us know what you guys think in the comments, or continue the conversation on Twitter. Let us know. And for sure, as the days go on leading up to the match, we always ask folks, hey, what'd you think of this match? Or what's your score prediction? And a lot of people end up giving us their thoughts there. But looking further ahead, other than the Houston Dynamo guys, we got, and when I say we, I'm talking about Austin FC. We got Vancouver, and we also have LA Galaxy. Now, the Galaxy will be at home, and the Vancouver will be away. But with this Houston Dynamo game, you get the next three games of kind of mayhem for Austin FC, because it is against the top three teams in the West currently. That could change when you get to the Whitecaps, for sure. They could drop down or whatever. But as of right now, the next three opponents are Houston Dynamo, which are in third, LA Galaxy, which is leading the Western Conference right now with 15 points there in first place, Diego Fagundes getting the 70-70 club achievement, and also the Vancouver Whitecaps. This team is probably the one that you hate to play because they probably bore you to death and they somehow get the result against you. They have 13 points there in second place, just right above Houston. So, Scott, I want to ask you, looking further ahead, you're looking past this Houston Dynamo game. It'll be tough, but then you got LA and you got Vancouver. I mean, how many points do you see Austin getting from the next three games?
Zero.
Oh my G.
I just,
oh my God. Can we just cancel the show tonight? I'm just kidding.
I mean, we don't have to cancel it. Like, I mean, Austin's never played well in Vancouver, and they're not traditionally not a good pro team to get points. And I think Galaxy are good this year, and they're going to come in motivated, especially with, you know, Diego leading them. Like, I just think it's a tough part of the schedule. It's much tougher than the early part of the season when Austin's kind of played the other, like, bottom Western Conference teams. And now we get a chance to kind of see if Austin can kind of compete with who's already kind of separating themselves to the top of the conference.
Now, before I get JC's take on the next three games, I just want to bring up something that Coach Wolf has said in the past. When he keeps saying, hey, we're playing against the top teams. We're playing against the best teams. Coach, now we got to play the best teams. Houston, Vancouver, and Galaxy are leading the West. This is when you should be saying that, Coach. But JC, your thoughts on the next three games? It's Houston, the Galaxy, and Vancouver. I mean, do you see any points in the next three games?
If they don't get a point against Houston, I don't see us getting any points at all. I think we've only beaten Vancouver once. I need to look that up. Twice at most. I think we've only beaten them once. I think we've only beat LA Galaxy once. That was back with games when we had a 2-0 win at home. So now with our form and with their form, something would have to happen, like outside of the norm, for us to get results, like injury or something. If we play according to form, which generally happens, I don't see us getting, I think at best maybe 1 point against Houston.
Oof. Now, I had somebody say on Discord that Austin FC is going to get 7 points from the next three games, y'all. Seven. I don't know where they're going to come from, but this person usually drops Optimus. Good takes. This
that person surprised gets me a bit.
Oh, my God. But check this out. Real quick, I did a Google search just to find out the stats between Vancouver and Austin. Vancouver Whitecaps versus Austin head-to-head record shows that of the six meetings they've had, Vancouver Whitecaps has won four times and Austin has won only once. So the stats are in favor for Vancouver. JC, you were right. Again, mate. But was not too optimistic for the next three games. I know a lot of Austin FC fans weren't too optimistic themselves on social media. On the post that we had on the Western TV Instagram, Explore ATX, they say our opportunity to turn the season around. It is. Ezra 10, he says, we're Austin TV. We are cooked TV. That's cheeky. I like that, Ezra. PJ the Great, he says, this team is about to get humbled. Hopefully I'm wrong, but with this head coach, we are a joke. Some ARU feed says, a string of L's coming and the excuse to not fire Wolf will be, quote, well, we played the top three teams in the conference. Of course we lose. Sheesh, I feel like it's getting too predictable. The conversations are getting too predictable for Austin FC, y'all. I don't know. Feels like we win, some folks come out and say Wolf in, we lose, the Wolf out banner comes out. So, and actually, there was tweets coming out that said, and people actually thought we would go away, hashtag Wolf out. So Hey, we'll just leave it there. But okay, y'all. Before we end tonight's episode, I know we said we were going to talk about the new rules that are going to come in to the league. I want to start off with the most recent one. Now, JC was talking about earlier the Champions League, this current one being the, well, I said this current one was going to be the best one of all time. JC said recency bias. Well, we'll do recency bias on the rules coming in to the league. Now, this was announced yesterday. It was announced by the league itself. They said MLS has announced yesterday, that the off-field treatment rule, time substitution rule, and in-stadium VAR announcements will be implemented in games starting this weekend. So what does that mean? I'll try to break it down here just a little bit. Make sure to follow along. The off-field treatment rule, oh, and also before, you might have seen these already in Efcito games. If you go to those games, I know a lot of people do, they already started last year with these rules in the MLS Next Pro. And they've been successful is what I've been hearing. So the off-treatment rule is, goes by this. It says, the off-field treatment rule allows medical professionals with time to assess and treat players off the field of play in a less pressurized environment. If a player with a suspected injury remains on the ground for more than 15 seconds, the referee will stop play and wave the medical crew onto the field to evaluate the player. When safe, the player will be removed from the field and remain off the field for a minimum of 2 minutes. That's 120 seconds for further assessment and treatment. Now, in MLS Next Pro, I think 2 minutes might not be that much. You could bunker down, but I think that's going to be very interesting to see it play out in the big leagues, in Major League Soccer, when a player is out 2 minutes, minimum of 2 minutes for further assessment and treatment. Now, it was first implemented in MLS Next Pro. Like I said earlier, the rule has allowed medical staffs time to treat players while also allowing match play to resume quickly. And then there's exceptions to off-the-field treatment rule. Those include instances of potential head injury, goalkeeper injuries, serious medical events, and fouls resulting in yellow or red cards. So I'll start off with my G. Scott. Your thoughts on that first rule that we're touching up on here today, the off-field treatment rule.
So a lot of these rules were supposed to be implemented at the beginning of the season after being tested in Next Pro. I'm a fan of anything that establishes a clear guideline on how to handle injuries. I think one of the big things that we've noticed in MLS this year is just the amount of injury time at the end of the games. And I think trying to get down to having a more traditional amount of injury time with the ball moving more and to try to also just like, it is a player safety issue to make sure that they are checked out correctly and not feeling a time crunch of trying to get them back out immediately. And so by codifying what the time limits are, it does give the medical staff a little bit more time and a little bit more understanding of what they can do to make sure a player is healthy before they go back out there, which is important.
I like that. I like that take. Now, one thing that I was thinking of, and you just kind of cleared up for me, Scott, is I'm wondering if the whole lockout with the referees had to, you know, kind of push this back, right? And it's already April 20th when it's going to be enacted and, you know, implemented into the league, and it kind of makes sense to start it off at the beginning of the season, and you know, we just got the refs back, so hey, you know, it kind of makes sense. So good take on that, Scott. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, JC, I'm gonna get your take on the time substitutions rule, bro. So this is the time substitutions rule, everybody. This is going to be a little bit interesting. Now, maximizing effective match time, the time substitutions rule requires that a substituted player exit the field within 10 seconds. Failure to exit from any point on the field within the 10 seconds will cause the incoming player to wait for a 60-second holding period before entering the game at the next stoppage. During the holding period and prior to the substitute entering, the team will play down a player. Exceptions to the rule include injury and goalkeeper substitutions. Enacted in MLS Next Pro during the 2023 season, 99.7% of the more than 3,200 substitutions were completed in 10 seconds or less. Now, JC, you and I have both been, and Scott also, everybody listening to this pod has grown up watching football, has been grown up watching soccer. And it's known that when you're up and you need to waste time, you make a substitution and the player's supposed to take forever to get off the field. That's how you eat up 40 seconds off the clock, right? We've seen it done multiple times. It is what it is. It's part of the game, is what I was telling people. But with this new rule, mate, that looks like it's done. Get off the field. Get on with it. Now, some folks are going to be very in favor of it. I want to see what you got to say, JC. What do you think about the time rule?
Not only that, well, I'm going to say with just as a overall umbrella with all of these. MLS has been taking a bunch of L's here recently in the PR department. But with regard to these rules being implemented, this is probably, these rules are some of the best things they've introduced in a while. So just having said that, with regards to the substitution rule, I will miss what has been become known as the dark arts over here. I like a little bit of gamesmanship and, you know, taking advantage of whatever strategy, but the strategy has been stamped out now with this rule, so you got to comply, and I don't mind it. I like keeping the game moving. I like that there's more emphasis on the field as far as what's being done and just being more efficient. Scott mentioned about the added extra time at the end of the halves now. On one hand, yes, I want to get every minute that I paid for with the ticket as far as all the soccer, because, you know, you have all that stoppage. On the other hand, I don't think we should be having 10 plus minutes of extra added time to each, to one half. It's a little bit of an overkill. So I'm thankful for these rules. I think they're going to work even better. I think there will be a transition period. I don't think it's going to be a hard implementation of it in the beginning. For the first two or three games, I think some stuff is going to slide a little bit, and then they'll get a little bit more strict as we go on. But I like it. I like it.
Now, I think the first two rules that we've talked about here so far on the pod, I think that they're going to be very easily accepted and implemented into the league. I think they're just the right thing to do. Just like you said, JC, the dark arts is going to be missing as we move forward with these leagues, these new rules in the league, right? You know, taking forever to get off the pitch and all that stuff. But this next one, the in-stadium VAR announcements, that's the one that I'm very excited to see. Now, I believe it was first maybe seen in Australia, that league. The refs were making the VAR decisions, you know, they were pretty much doing the NFL style. They were letting the whole stadium know what was going on. And then we started to see it pop up in other leagues and stuff like that. And now it makes it to the MLS. So the wording is this. It says, VAR decisions will be explained and announced by the referee, the fans, and stadium and broadcast viewers at home. The new sporting initiatives were previously announced during the 2024 MLS preseason, but were postponed due to labor negotiations. My answer right there. Thank you, Scott, earlier. And other initiatives, including the return to Pele equity protocol and stoppage time clock, took effect at the start of the 2024 MLS regular season. So, Scott, I mentioned you right now, mate. I got my answer, of course. But what's your take on the in-stadium VAR announcements? I mean, it's going to be like the NFL. I feel like maybe one of the referees is going to get confused, and he might say flag on the play. And then he's going to say, oh, you know what? Sorry, everybody. Wrong sport. But what do you think of this VAR stuff?
I mean, I'm for anything that involves more transparency with officials, especially with calls on the field. I still don't totally trust like the MLS VAR system, just based on like stuff that we've seen. So at least getting like an in-stadium explanation will at least be kind of helpful for those of us who don't get to see replays or that kind of thing that the TV audience gets. As far as which referee is going to mess it up the most, it's absolutely Ted Uncle. I cannot wait for Ted Uncle to have to explain a VAR call to an MLS crowd. It's going to be beautiful television.
Yes. And speaking of Ted Uncle, you know what? We completely forgot to mention Cascante being out against Houston. So that's something very important too. Totally missed that. But hey, we'll get to it right now before we end the pod. But JC, the in-stadium VAR announcements, you dropped an NFL quote earlier. What did you think of this VAR announcement mumbo jumbo that's starting to come into MLS? I mean, are you for it? Are you not really for it? I mean, earlier you said that as an umbrella, you like all of them coming into the league, but this one specifically, do you think this one was necessary?
Most certainly. I've actually been very much on board with this even before. I really thought when MLS was going to start introducing VAR that this was going to automatically come with it, because that's the first thing my mind went to was NFL. Like being able to see the replay, everybody can see it, having it broken down, explained according to the rules. Of course, it's always going to come down, like Scott said, to making sure is that the VAR is doing their job. So, for example, in the Premier League, for whatever reason, they seem to botch those calls regularly. It's like, it's comedic at this point. I wonder if they're intentionally trolling at this point, but there's so much money involved that cannot possibly be the case, I would think. I don't know. MLS has generally proven to be more consistent with it. When you mentioned Australia, of course, again, that was that's a league that has, I don't know if I say perfected it yet, but it is exceptional. I've seen several clips of the refs breaking it down. You can hear the conversation amongst them in the rooms as well. And it is just expertly done, in my opinion. If MLS can get anywhere near that, the transparency and just say, okay, whether I agree with the call or not, at least I see and hear what's going on and I can evaluate it according to the rules. And all right, I can live with what's going on. So again, there's probably going to be a couple of hiccups for a little bit, but I think this is going to go over very well with the fan base in the stadium. They're still going to be pissed if the call goes against them, but at least we'll have transparency for the pissed off. So that's good.
Dude, now, JC, you mentioned the stadium, how they're going to react to some calls. Now, I know some MLS stadiums are a bit of ghost towns. There's not that many people watching the games for certain teams. But when you talk about Q2 and you talk about Austin FC's fan base, I cannot wait for two things. Number one, the reaction from the stadium when the call goes against the team, the boo, the ah, the blah. And I can't wait for the time that they get the first call in favor for the team. The yeah, let's go. The complete euphoria that the stadium is going to feel when they hear that first positive NFL-style VAR announcement to everybody in attendance at Q2 Stadium. So that's going to be very exciting. So I really like what I had to say on these rules. Now, there is one more thing that I wanted to touch up on before we talk about Cascante and we get out here, is the buyout rule. Now, there was some other stuff that was presented to MLS that we heard about from, what was it, Paul Tenorio, I believe, or Tom Bogert, one of those two, but they work for the Athletic. Maybe y'all can correct me right now. But the buyout option, it used to be that MLS teams only had one. Now they're going to have two and some other little things, right? We'll talk about it here now. But why the buyout is important is because as soon as it was announced to the public, Austin FC fans, it seems like they just snapped their neck and they set their eyes on Emiliano Rigoni and said, hey, Rigoni, you're about to get bought out, brother. So, Scott, I want to start off with you, mate. Why is the second buyout so important, especially for a team like Austin FC?
The biggest thing that it changes is that it helps teams get out of bad contracts easier. Having one kind of limits your options of really committing to making the move one way. Getting a second one really adds that. Especially for a team like Austin. I think it was Roto a few months ago who said something to the effect of wanting to get rid of players but nobody wanting to buy them. Yeah. And having another buyout, as long as your ownership is willing to eat that money and pay that money out, like, is a way of doing that to help turn over. Some of the other rules kind of gave a little more flexibility in terms of roster construction for MLS teams, which I think is good, because one of the downsides to having a league that has so much structure in their salary is that everybody kind of has to try to build the same, and that just kind of inherently isn't as interesting. Hopefully Austin uses the buyouts effectively. I mean, the most effective way of using them is to clear some of those specialty roster spots for guys that you're planning on bringing in anyway. And I mean, Rigoni's kind of the obvious one there. Even some of the higher GAM guys like Zardes or Hedges could be beneficial, as long as Precourt's willing to spend it. But it does open up a lot of options depending on which structure Grota wants to go in.
Good take, mate. Good take. Now, I want to shift the focus onto my GJC. We're talking about the buyout, bro. We're talking about Rigoni. Would you use one of your buyout options on Emiliano Rigoni, or you think that people just need to bite the bullet and not take that financial oil, because it'll just be another one piled onto the unfortunate transactions or unfortunate financial decisions that this club has made with players? Would you buy him out?
Would I buy him out? Yes. Now, to my knowledge, I don't believe these buyouts count towards like our cap or anything. You just have two buyouts, and that's it. And it's, like Scott said, as long as the ownership and front office are willing to take that hit, as far as the club is concerned, then it's whatever. I was not excited when I heard this rule come out, for the simple fact that if your front office is in a position where you need to buy out players, and especially depending on what type of players we're needing to buy on our roster, it's just an indication that we didn't build correctly, that we made some poor decisions along the way. If you're a well-organized, well-run organization, you're not needing the buyouts are not a concern. Those aren't a priority. You know, that's a it's a just in case kind of thing, but it's not something that you're looking to use every season. So if you're having to use them to clear out some players and get the books, their salary off your books, then that's just an indication of, like I said, how the team is being run. Hopefully going forward, we can be run more efficiently, and this is not something we're really concerned with having to utilize.
My DJC, I like that take. Now, just some history off the top of my head, players that Austin FC has bought out in the past, and if I forget some, please feel free to add them on. Ulises Segura was bought out by Austin FC. Amro Tarek was bought out by Austin FC. Was Cecilio Dominguez bought out, y'all?
No, he was
he transferred, sold. Right?
Yeah, he was
transferred. Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Cecilio?
I believe so.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure if it was a straight transfer or if he got loaned first, but I know he wasn't bought out.
Even after the suspension or the – not suspension, but the investigation? MLS, I forget how that ended.
Yeah, if they'd have bought him out, they probably would have pulled the trigger on that early. But he was with us for a while, and everybody was complaining about, okay, why do we just have this dude sitting on the bench if we're not planning on keeping him and all that kind of stuff. I believe, like Scott said, I'm almost certain we transferred him out to what team was it in Mexico, right? Was it
he ended up
who was it?
He ended up joining Santos. Santos of Mexico, but off of yes, off of a quick Google search.
Did we buy him out?
No, it is Santos.
Yeah, but they mutually agreed to end the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a buyout or not?
I think according to MLS rules, it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they mutually terminated it.
Didn't we? So, okay, the first season, I do remember, like you said, it was Segura. Wasn't the second season Stroud? Was that it, or did we just release him?
No, Stroud was traded. Yeah, Stroud was traded, but he got traded like really early. Like he got traded like during the season, even
in
though
St. Louis
wasn't playing yet.
Oh, that's right. Let's see. Who was the one?
Dadic for sure.
Second season.
Dadic was bought out.
Yeah,
but that was the third season, though, right?
Yeah, in 2023,
like between. So, who was that second one? I'm trying to remember who the second one was.
Season two was Segura because they didn't use a buyout in the first season because he was still he was trying to come back from injury and Austin just
we've used
him
three
out.
Haven't we used three buyouts? I'm almost
what
certain
happened
we've
to
used three buyouts.
What happened to Aaron Schoenfeld? Did he get bought out?
Did
as
he
well?
Retire?
I think that's what it was. He did
no,
retire.
No, I think
yeah.
I think his contract ended.
Or that, one or the other.
I'm just seeing so far Ulises Segura and Amro Tarek. That's all I'm seeing right now for the buyouts. Rigoni could be number three, though. We'll see what happens there. But, okay, hey, before we get out of here, let's touch up on Cascante's situation. He's not going to be in Houston. He's out on suspension, 5 yellow card accumulation. I don't know if he was fined by the league. I didn't see that tweet come out. But we do know he will be out. Now, the question is it going to be Hedges? Leivaisinen, is he back? But we know most likely it'll be Matt Hedges and Brendan Heinzeig. I'll start off with Scott on this one because, Scott, you mentioned a couple of days ago how you're ready to see this defense without Julio Cascante. Well, you're going to get Matt Hedges and Brendan Heinzeig, so I got to ask you, are you confident?
Confident? No, because I have difficulty having confidence in things I haven't seen yet, which is just basic personality.
fair enough.
But I think it's for Austin FC fans who have not treated Julio Cascante well at times and feeling as though he is not deserving or played up to the starting spot that he always gets and thinking that he's one of Wolf's favorites, I'm very interested to see what happens when Austin has two center backs that don't include him, and especially two guys who have been brought in the last year, and seeing if that does help in other ways in terms of defensive organization or awareness that might be things that Julio isn't as strong at. And so we might get to see, I think just being able to see something different to see if maybe this is more systemic versus player-based would actually be really informative for us.
Okay. Now, my GJC, I got to get your take. Julio Cascante, he's going to be out against the Houston Dynamo. If you ask me, we're going to miss a huge piece on our tactical board. Cascante, I always say that he probably understands Wolf Ball the best. He's been here since the jump. You know, Josh Wolf trusts him. You know that Cascante is one of Josh Wolf's guys. So, how do you think the defense is going to do without this anchor for Austin FC back there? Now, I know fans are going to argue and say he's not an anchor. Scott said it well. He said a lot of Austin FC fans have treated Cascante poorly. But this guy, you know, he's an international center back. He goes with his country. He did a job against Argentina in the first half, right? But Cascante, he's not going to be in Houston. JC, how much will Austin FC miss him? Or are they not going to miss him at all because Hedges is going to step up?
That's going to be interesting. Hedges is a MLS Defender of the Year, formerly kind of player. He hasn't really shown that for us yet, but I don't know how many of us could have reasonably expected him to show that at his age. He's closer to retirement than his prime in those days, especially. Having said that, he is an older veteran. He's experienced. He knows this league, and he's been with Dallas before us, so he knows about playing away in Houston, most certainly. Will we miss Cascante as far as getting results? I don't think the difference between Hedges and Cascante is going to make the difference in what kind of result we'll get in Houston. I think for one game, I think everything keeps going the way it has gone. It's possible we might see, quote unquote, an error-free kind of game, not as in not get scored on, but you know, one of the knocks fans have had against Cascante in the past is that he's always good for one or two of these big time blunders that can lead to goals or whatever.
Yep,
I
that's
think
true.
we'll see a game that doesn't have as many, if at all, any of those kind of moments, but we'll see what happens. I think this is just a good game to see what we have. Sometimes you need a game like this to know what you have, what you don't have, and how things are going to progress. So, in my opinion, as far as the team is concerned and as far as the fans is concerned, this will be a good time to gauge what our defense actually is all about.
Oof, I
I mean,
like
also
that
like,
take, mate. Go
I mean,
ahead,
also
Scott.
like Hedges is on what, like 800K? Like he's somebody that we should feel confident throwing out there to play a game considering what his salary is.
I think he might be a little bit more than that, but 800K is a pretty good estimate, brother. Pretty good estimate. Now, I do want to say that Matt Hedges, before we get out of here, Matt Hedges, he's played against Minnesota, Seattle, St. Louis, Philly, Orlando, 90 minutes. 6 minutes against Dallas when he came in that back five, but he didn't feature against San Jose and he didn't feature against St. Louis. So he's been out of the loop for a bit. He's going to be back against Houston. So we'll see exactly where he's at physically. I know he's a professional player for sure, takes care of his body, but he's got to get up to rhythm fast. And even though it's just one game, he needs to perform. Now, we do get Cascante back for the Galaxy. So I'm sure that's going to give a little bit of confidence for the Austin fans. Back at home against a team that's leading the West right now, but we'll see just how this defense shapes up and fares without the likes of Julio Cascante. But they have Matt Hedges, a guy that knows the league very well, and I'm sure he knows the Houston Dynamo even more. So I trust in Hedges, and I think he is going to do the job. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking at Brendan Hines like more like, hey, are you ready, bro? Are you ready? Because Hedges, I think he's going to slot in and do a job. But gentlemen, is there anything you would like to add on tonight's episode? I know we touched up on a couple of things, but before we get out of here, anything else you want to add, guys? I'll start off with my G Scott.
No, I don't think I have anything else. I think we've covered everything.
I think so too. I think so too, mate. Now, JC, bro, anything else you want to add on to the pod before we get out of here, brother?
Not that I can think of. Everybody who's traveling to Houston, be safe. I'm going to try to go, but I have some meetings over the weekend, so we'll see if I get to get up there or not. But
Okay.
other than that, I think we're good to go.
All right, my G JC, my G Scott, thank you for being here on tonight's episode of the Top Flight Pod. Definitely, we got to have more of Scott and JC on the episodes. I really enjoyed the conversation tonight because, like I said, sometimes Ibali just hurts my health, bro. He just for like my just mental health and my overall well-being. Like sometimes you just get enough of volley, and it's nice to talk to my GJC. It's nice to talk to my D. Scott. And what would have made this better is if Football Critic was here, right? We would have had a great conversation. But that's it for tonight. We'll be back on Sunday to talk about the Houston Dynamo match, and I'm gonna hear Bali's take on Arsenal, and I gotta hear Brian's take on Man City's debacle against Real Madrid. But that's it for us tonight. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your morning. Enjoy your weekend. Houston Dynamo, we're gonna get the result this weekend. I don't care what Scott said. I don't care what JC said. I do care. I'm just kidding. I care what they say. But we'll see you guys soon. Have a good night, everybody, and be safe. Later.
Straight crazy. Let's go.
Night.